You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, you beautiful MFs. There's lots to talk about today. We'll start with some funnies, as we usually do. I'll get into the best movie ever, because it's getting better. I'll do some sports again this week. I'll talk about Ibogaine, because they just had a Joe Rogan Experience episode with Brian Hubbard and Rick Perry. That was awesome. Ibogaine is the miracle plant that saves lives, mine included. I'll talk about space, the astronauts going where no man has gone before. I'll give you a tech update, some money stuff, and let's start with funnies. I'm glad you're here. First funny is from Dad to the Bone. He says, I'm convinced that every grown man named Gary was never a baby. I mean, seriously, have any of you ever met a baby named Gary? I have not. Next one is from Lydia Coppy. She says, my kid told me tonight that she still loves me, but that she doesn't need me to tuck her in at bedtime anymore. I gave her a hug and told her I totally understand, and left her room and went out into the street, and now I'm laying in traffic. All right, this one's from Woke and Woofing. He said, our son asked if he could get a tattoo to celebrate his gender reassignment surgery. Obviously, we said no. What kind of parent lets a four-year-old make a life-changing decision like that? Yeah, tattoos are forever. Just like having no D. Thrill of the Gorilla. He's got two funnies this week. He says, the cashier said, that'll be $19.94. So I pull out a $50 bill. And the cashier says, I'm sorry, but we've had a problem with counterfeit bills. Do you have anything smaller? And so I pulled out a $25 bill. His next one comes to us at the right time, since tax day is coming up, April 15th. Have you done your taxes? I finished them 2 days ago. I'm usually a little later. I usually like to get it down to the wire. I put it off because I dread it because I don't like doing taxes, but it's got to be done so we can support. Well, this is appropriate for what I was just about to say. It says, people who cheat on their taxes disgust me. That's not the type of world I want to raise my 27 Somali kids in. Yeah, Somalis need to get paid. We need to pay our taxes. They got daycares to run. TXMC Trades says, open the effing straight, I whisper to my wife as I snuggle up beside her. I'll talk more about that in a minute. S, the account that goes by S, says, hangovers should end after an hour. I get it, body. I effed up. I drank too much. Let's not relitigate the past all day. All right, last but not least, as far as funnies go, I don't know who to give credit to for this one, too, but it says, I'm not racist. My girlfriend's eye is black. Yeah, I saved the best for last. And speaking of girlfriends, let's get into some more serious stuff here. Rob Henderson on X, he posted this excerpt from an article titled, Your Boyfriend Isn't Your Cameraman. It says, some boyfriends say taking pictures of their girlfriend feels like a full-time job, admitting entire trips have been ruined by this, and asking other guys online how to deal with all these demands to take pictures of her. And it says, her need for me to catalog her life is draining my soul. Talk amongst yourselves. Last week I said something about quicksand. Remember being a concern when we were kids, and then turns out you've probably never seen quicksand in your life, nor have I. Well, the National Park Service has issued a warning regarding hazardous quicksand. This is in the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area in southern Utah and northern Arizona as of March 2026. So last month, they issued this warning about quicksand. It says, if you ever find yourself in quicksand, you are supposed to distribute your weight by leaning back and acting as though you're floating on your back, which I never would have guessed that. And I'm sure I'm sure that's not what you'd naturally do if you were sinking quickly, just kind of fall on your back. That would kind of seem like, that would feel akin to giving up. But that's the official advice, because if you were to panic and you start making too quick a movement, you sink deeper. But quicksand, it says, is rarely fatal. Unlike the cartoons where you see a little hat sitting there in the sand, like Ed, Ed, and Eddie, who flip like confetti. And then when you back, they back to call you dog. Big Sean. Big Sean. There was a guy in Mississippi a couple weeks ago who got stuck in quicksand. I think that it was mentioned in this article. Somebody named Jaron Wynn, 28 years old. He was stuck in quicksand up to his waist. He was stuck for 3 hours before the fire department came and got him out. So be careful out there if you're in Utah or Arizona. I bet you know what I'm thinking with the quicksand warnings in Arizona. Yeah, Nancy Guthrie. I know they looked down the septic tank, but did they check all the sand? I don't know. There's not too much happening in sports. I wanted to give you a sports update. I know we have the Masters coming this weekend. If I had to bet, I would bet that a friend of Trump's is going to win. He seems to be friends with a lot of those dudes. I know he's friends with DeChambeau and Scheffler. And Tiger Woods is a close enough friend that Tiger called him right after he had his car accident. I think he thought telling the cop that he was just talking to the president might impress the cop. But they didn't seem impressed with Tiger. So I don't think they cared about the president either. Can you imagine being a billionaire? Billionaire with a B? And calling the president right after you get in a car accident and you know you're at fault, yet you still go to jail. You have billions of dollars, or at least a billion, and you're good buddies with Trump. But that makes me love America even more, right? When he's still got to pay the price for it. That's America, baby. I was disappointed that none of the final four games gave us a fantastic finish. In the national championship game on Monday night, I think UConn came closest to giving us a good game. They cut it to 4 with 37 seconds left, and then they stupidly took a 3 from the parking lot that was inadvisable. It wasn't even close. It was just a bad shot, especially when you don't need a 3. Down by 4 with 37 seconds left, get a quick 2 or an open 3 that's close. You've got to have a guy on your team that can create his own shot off the dribble. Am I right? Anybody can throw up a 3 from way out in the boonies. So that's just bad basketball. But what do I know? What I like most about that final was the Michigan star, Lindenborg. He was the Big Ten Player of the Year. He was interviewed at halftime, and he was talking about the first half, and he said, "I feel awful, super weak. I can't make anything." And I wonder if that's not maybe some Trump effect, because it was so honest. I mean, really, who says that? That I feel awful and I can't make anything. You never hear a player talk like that. And because I was laughing, the wife asked me, she was like, "Well, why is that so rare?" And I said, "That's not even something I would do." And I'm pretty candid, but I'm a big believer in how words that come out of your mouth can impact you, because it's like you're listening. And the vibrations that go through your body resonate, and whether it's positive or negative that you're saying. So I wouldn't want my body to hear that. I would be positive and optimistic. And maybe that's just how I am naturally. I don't know. But I've talked about this before. There's a book I read coming out of college called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself by Shad Helmstetter. I also was big on The Power of Positive Thinking, Norman Vincent Peale. Or even As a Man Thinketh. I read all those books in my early 20s. And yeah, I was obsessed with those books coming out of college and just getting the right mindset. You know, something, this reminds me, something I heard Jim Rohn say that had a big impact on me at that age. He said, "What if you had to be rich? Are there some things you could do? Some risks you could take? Some skills that you could develop? Like, what disciplines might you start to incorporate into your life if you had to be rich?" And that really, I love that message. And so I'm still working on it. Not as much as I was then, but we'd all like to be rich, right? But right now I might as well be on disability. I cannot do much and it sucks, but what else? I was watching Cooper Flagg last weekend against I think this was Easter Sunday. They were playing against the Lakers and he looked good. He was the first overall pick, rookie out of Duke. He just had 96 points in a two-game span, which that had only been done by one other person, albeit four times. It was done by Wilt the Stilt way back when. And also, I'm ready for LeBron to retire officially. Let's talk about Ibogaine. Then I'll give you an update in the best movie ever. So Rick Perry and Brian Hubbard went back on the Rogan show to share the latest in the Texas Ibogaine initiative and their attempts to get it FDA approved. That is moving. It is moving forward. I couldn't be more excited about that. I couldn't be more proud to be a Texan since we're leading the charge in Texas. I have said since their first appearance on JRE that I hope you remember me saying this, and I'm not even sure if I said this out loud or if I said it in a private conversation with Justin Jackson, who was my guest when we talked about Ibogaine, but I believed that Rick Perry wasn't being entirely forthcoming about his personal situation, because one, there's no way that you could be as strong of an evangelist as he is for Ibogaine unless you had done it. And two, I said that I believed he was on opiates when he couldn't remember the third thing in the Republican primary debate, because opiates make you stupid. And I thought that he probably got off of opiates. I don't know if it's opioids or opiates. Let's call it opiates because it's easier to say. But I thought that he probably got off of them by way of Ibogaine. And what do you know? He said exactly that on this latest Rogan episode. But he said it was way worse than just opiates that he was on. He said he was taking Ambien to sleep and Provigil during the day to keep him going. And so Provigil is an upper, like a stimulant. And usually how that works, you take a stimulant during the day, you need something like Ambien to go to sleep at night. So he was on some drugs. And the same thing happened to me when I was public speaking one time, where I had three things that I wanted to share with the audience, and I couldn't remember the third thing. I drew a blank. And I've been asked a few times when I started taking fentanyl, and I always, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, do you remember something I said 3 or 4 years ago that was real dumb? And I tell them I can't be sure when I started taking it, because I don't know when it was an ingredient in whatever pill I was taking. But my best guess is around 2021. From there, I was probably on it anywhere from probably about 2 years, 2.5 years, maybe. I'm possibly more. I'm not sure. The medicine would feel different with each refill. And at times it'd be real strong, which I liked, because what I would do is I could bite them in half and then bite them in half again when they were real strong. So just trying to measure what I called my minimum viable dose to get rid of the pain that I was feeling. So a quarter of a pill sometimes is all it took to cure the pain, which was great because it meant I wouldn't need to fly out of the country for 9 months if I could just take a quarter of a pill. And that's one of the things that saved me was taking as prescribed, because I needed them to last. I couldn't go a week without it. So, and I'm sure if I had taken a whole pill that of the really, when it was really, really strong, that I'd be dead. Since I believe the amount of fentanyl it takes to kill you is the equivalent of about 11 to 12 grains of salt. So I do feel like I'm on borrowed time. Obviously, I had some tolerance to it, which may be why it didn't kill me, but I think just a little tiny bit more, and I would not be here with you. And there are so many effects of that, like feeling like you're on borrowed time and losing all interest in materialism. If you saw my car, you'd probably laugh at me, which I'm sure Ibogaine had something to do with that, too. Just, I don't know. It's a very spiritual experience. I'm not sure. But for me, being on opiates, it wasn't only forgetting the third thing. So you know how Facebook and Instagram will remind you of something you posted in your stories 4 years ago when it's the anniversary of whatever you posted? And many of those, I don't remember posting. I don't recognize whatever it is that I said. And it sucks, but moving on, full speed ahead. I didn't drink alcohol, not once during that time that I was on pills. And it's mainly because I didn't want to die. I didn't want to combine anything else with it. You're not supposed to drink alcohol if you're on opiates. And just for other health reasons, and it saved a lot of money when you don't drink. You know, my dinner bills are a lot more expensive now since I do have a couple of drinks with dinner sometimes. I would also get my blood work done to make sure my liver enzymes were okay. And they were. So imagine being somewhat of a health nut. Constant exercise and eating right and being disciplined and coaching others on doing the same. And meanwhile, you're feeding your body a steady dose of fentanyl. It's unbelievable. But this latest Rogan episode with these two guys, that Brian Hubbard fella, he is a national treasure. If Ibogaine isn't something you're interested in learning about, I would at least recommend you got to listen to the last 15 minutes. And that would be for both of his appearances on Rogan. The finale of each episode is incredible because he might be the most eloquent wordsmith I have ever heard in my life. And that first episode he was on, his closing, that nearly brought me to tears. And this last episode, the last 15 minutes of this last one, it's probably more inspiring. And the first one probably won't bring you to tears like it did me. It's personal for me, so it's a little bit different. But you've got to hear the eloquence that he delivers his final remarks. It's really something to behold. Although my favorite quote of his in this last episode, it came early when he said, might have been like 15 minutes into it. He said, if there is the equivalent of being brought to the judgment throne of God on this side of life, it is an Ibogaine experience. I concur. He shared that they've secured $100 million in funding for Texas to lead the way on Ibogaine research. And that, for me, is like Christmas. That is a gift. If we get Ibogaine going in Texas, this truly has the potential to change humanity in ways unimaginable. It's that powerful. It is divinely ours. I believe God provided it to heal humanity, and we're just now finding out how we can do that. Another quote from the episode I really liked was something Rick Perry said. I didn't like when he kept saying literally. He did that in the first episode, and he uses it incorrectly a lot. Like when somebody tells you are literally a piece of shit. Come on, dude. Really? He was talking about being so candid about his story, and he said that their lives, talking about the people that he could potentially help, their lives matter more than my reputation, as he shared his drug addiction. And that could come from Ibogaine too. So you remember how I've talked about the biggest takeaway is you come away with love for your fellow man and you want to serve others, and the fact that you're willing to bear all that you've been through for the world, let everybody know how flawed you are, telling people you were on drugs, none of that is easy. But you come away from an Ibogaine experience with so much love and empathy, and it's like empathy overload, that you couldn't care less what people think about you, because you know that helping people to get the same help that you got outweighs any ego hit that you might take. And not having much ego left after Ibogaine, if you have any ego left, most psychedelics are that way. They help to destroy the ego, which is just one of the many benefits. But when you see it up close and personal, in a very personal way, because you're at this clinic where other guys are sharing their deepest, darkest secrets and their the hell that they've been through. They've hit the rockiest of bottoms, and this plant medicine, it gives them their life back, and you laugh with them, you cry with them, there are lots of hugs and I love yous, and yeah, their lives matter more than your reputation. That is a fantastic quote. Have you heard Joe Rogan's? I'm kind of switching gears, but since we're talking about Joe Rogan, he has a theory on autism that I thought was interesting. He said, well, it's more of a what if, I would say. He suggested that the sharp rise in autism rates, which he believes are real, not thanks to being able to better diagnose it or anything, as some claim. He thinks all the autism might be preparing humanity for a future where we merge with machines, where humans merge with machines and AI, and a fully digital or data-driven sort of society, because what society sees as autism traits as it stands now are like intensely focusing on a screen or not needing social interaction. And he's saying that it could all be an evolutionary adaptation, like a built-in upgrade for the coming AI era. And he cites stats like in California, where autism rates were once 1 in 10,000 or something. It was not a lot of people, 1 in 10,000. And now it's something like 1 in 12. And so he adds that many of the top tech leaders, and especially those who are working to improve AI every day, messing with robots and living in virtual worlds, he said that they're all on the spectrum. So he says in the coming AI age, staring at screens all day and being able to work remotely by yourself, and at some point in the not too distant future, if we're fully integrated with tech 24/7, that those traits are going to be advantageous rather than the soft skills of interacting with people and all kinds of other skills. But his quote was this. He said, if we're going to merge with machines, what better way than to eliminate empathy, eliminate emotions, make us able to stay at home and stare at a screen for hours at a time with no concern whatsoever? One day, it's not going to be 1 in 12 on the spectrum. It's going to be 100%. You've got a full spectrum society, and there's no regular people left. He says that we're thinking of autism as a flaw, but it might be a feature. Maybe that's what's supposed to happen, a pathway from territorial primates to something new. Anyway, I thought that was fun to think about. All right, best movie ever. Two airmen were shot down in Iran, two American airmen. After his F-15 was shot down, the Iranians, I guess it was an IRGC member, shot down an F-15E with a shoulder-fired missile in Iranian airspace, and he ejected, and he stayed poised, and he was bleeding evidently, but he used his survival training to avoid getting captured by the IRGC. So he moved to a spot in the mountains where he'd be harder to spot, and evidently climbed up a 7,000-foot ridge line, and he was hiding up in a crevice somewhere in the mountains, and so that's how he stayed out of sight. So that cover helped him to remain hidden while the Iranian forces tried to get him before we did, because that would have been a heck of a trophy for him. They said that he also used this emergency beacon to where he could establish contact with U.S. forces so that they would know how to find him. But he was hidden for more than 24 hours after he did all this hiking up the mountain. And so he was shot down on Good Friday. He stays hidden and is rescued early on Easter Sunday. Just incredible. Not just for him, but for all those guys. I mean, it's incredible for all we did to get him. We sent 200 soldiers, I think was the number thrown out. I think Trump said hundreds. Remember he asked, he was like, how many did we send? And he said, sir, I'd rather keep that a secret. I couldn't see who he was talking to, but I assume it was a general or something. But we used 6 different decoys and fooled the Iranians to think that we had already got him, and we were taking him out by land. And then afterward, we had to blow up 2 aircraft so that they wouldn't be seized by the enemy. Do you think that won't help military recruitment? I used to talk about how awful it would have been to be a hostage during the Biden administration, whether it be in Venezuela, where hostages were released after Trump became president, or Gaza. There were Americans in Gaza, or Brittany Griner. That dude got caught with some weed in Russia, because when you don't have a strong leader that other countries respect, you're liable to stay a hostage for a long time. That'd be an interesting quote for awfuls, right? Liberal white women. Although I don't think this is something they could conceptualize necessarily, but they have to. And I say that they can't conceptualize it because they have to feel pain themselves in order to understand, in order to get it, in order to live in reality. The boot has to be on their neck. That's communism. The useful idiots. Well, if you were to ask your average awful, if you found yourself in a Venezuelan prison, or if you were hiding in the mountains of Iran, and after your fighter jet was shot down, who would you rather be president? Would you rather have Biden or Trump? Would they say, they would say Biden, right, I guess, or Kamala. Would you rather have Kamala or Trump when you're stuck in a Mexican prison? See, I don't think their brain would short circuit and they wouldn't be able to give you a direct answer because they're crazy people. But being a civilian, I would be so much more comfortable getting thrown in a foreign prison with Trump as president than any other president, at least in my lifetime. The rescue of that American is going to make for a great movie, and I hope it stars Marky Mark. Another movie that could be made from the best movie ever is The Four Astronauts, who went to the dark side of the moon. Did you see that? They cut communications for 45 minutes as they were on the other side of the moon. Every time I hear Dark Side of the Moon, I think of that Kryptonite song. Who is Three Doors Down? If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? They say Dark Side of the Moon in that song. I was watching, was this Monday night, Jesse Waters was interviewing a former astronaut who'd been to space. Can you be an astronaut without having gone to space? I don't know the answer to that question. Let me prompt AI real quick. I think we need a new name for AI, because let me Google it rolls off the tongue. When you say, let me AI it, I don't know, it doesn't come out easy. Let me prompt or query AI, not as good, but I'm stalling to buy some time here. Yes, an individual can be considered an astronaut without having been to space, primarily if they have completed professional training as an astronaut candidate, in parentheses, ASCAN, ASCAN. If they've served in a training astronaut role or were medically grounded after selection. While spaceflight is the ultimate goal, professional titles and training often confer the title before launch. That'd be something, huh? If you studied to be an astronaut all your life and you just had a goal to go to space and never got to do it. Yeah, I wonder if that gets political. I'm sure it does, right? It's politics, and there's politics everywhere. Anyway, this astronaut, he was asked what was it like to look at Earth from space. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, it makes you feel wonderful and it makes you feel godlike because you're looking out on the whole of Earth and every human is in this one sphere you're looking at and you're kind of looking down on them. And then he said, but you look the other way out into space and you realize that you're just a tiny speck of existence. Anyway, I thought that was cool. That was a great question to ask. Good on you, Jesse. Frank Fleming had a good post about this. He said, everybody wants to talk about Americans being arrogant, but we've never once talked about charging other countries to look at our moon. Trump's Easter message. Should we talk about that? Where he said, open the effing straight, you crazy bastards. And then he added, praise be to Allah. What'd you think of that? I didn't have a problem with it, as you might expect, right? But sometimes I do have a problem with things he says. Have you ever heard that people who curse tend to be more honest? I believe that to be true. When you get a very transparent and honest president, he's going to talk like you and I do. And that's part of his appeal. I saw where Tucker Carlson had a problem with it. His big beef was him mocking their religion by talking about Allah with the Allah comment. But one thing about Trump that is unique is he understands incentives. He understands motivation. So he talks to people where they are, which, you know, he's like a lifelong manager. Managers manage to the individual. It's individually based. And he uses language that he thinks is going to work. And he's very strategic that way. Coming from New York and the life that he has had, he's interacted with so many different people, and he listens well, and he knows how to interact with different people, which is a skill set that you can, I don't know how else you would develop it better than working in business in New York City for 60 years. And not just New York City, he's got buildings in Chicago and on the West Coast, obviously. But as usual, I see a lot of myself in Trump. Like, if you wanted to, let's say you wanted to get something done in Prague, would it be better to send, I don't know, Greg Gutfeld or me? Or would it be better to send your CPA? No. I would argue it'd be me, because I've spent roughly 6 months of my life there, and I understand a little bit of the culture and the people and how to talk to them and hopefully motivate them and get them to the negotiating table if I had to. A black guy from New Orleans. You wouldn't send Megan Whitmer, you'd send me, you know, and I like Tucker. I know he has a lot of that skill set too. He can talk to anybody and he gets people, but I would say he very much comes across like a boarding school kid, which he was. So I trust Trump's approach. He's got a pretty good track record. And by pretty good, I mean maybe the best of anyone alive when it comes to solving big problems. But it's a very American thing to criticize those in power. So I welcome dissent. I'm glad there's always seems to be some infighting on the right. But Trump uses the F word strategically, which is why it works. You can't use it every day. It'll lose its oomph. You remember when the communists started using the F word to try to be like Trump? I guess they were trying to be cool. F Trump and all that. And it fell flat, of course. And I haven't seen them do it lately. So now they can criticize Trump for using the F word, especially on Easter. But they're children. Let's do some money stuff. Oil surged above $100 after Trump said that he was thinking about bombing Iran back to the Stone Ages. And the Strait of Hormuz traffic as of this week remains near zero. Oil is up over 50% since the war in Iran started. Did you know that over the last 30 years, the purchasing power of the U.S. consumer dollar has been cut in half? And that's all thanks to inflation. While the S&P 500 over the past 30 years has gained 789%. How about that? That's 7.6% per year. And that is after adjusting for inflation. So usually they say the stock market goes up 10% a year on average, but that after inflation, it's 7%. Well, here it says up over 7.5% over the last 30 years. So unless you like having dry powder for when there's blood in the streets, you never want to be too heavy cash. And that's why. What I tell my guys, and this is contrary to the advice that somebody like Dave Ramsey might give or does give, he likes to say you should keep 3 to 6 months worth of expenses in what he calls an emergency fund. But most of the guys I work with, and I'll say to you, as I say to them, I'm not a finance professional. Don't take advice from some podcaster. But that said, the guys I work with don't need to keep that much cash in an emergency fund because, one, they're young. Most of them don't have dependents. And two, they're all studs. So the likelihood that they would stay unemployed very long is very low. So I encourage them not to be too heavy cash, again, unless you're doing the dry powder thing and you've got dollar cost averaging down pat. So in March, hedge funds sold global stocks at the fastest rate in 13 years. That is according to data compiled by Goldman Sachs' main brokerage house. The pace of selling was the second largest since the bank started collecting data on this in 2011. It was largely driven by a pickup in short sales, underscoring concern that the stock market is prone to more weakness as the fighting in Iran continues. The MSCI, which is, there's a lot of MSCI, I'm talking about the all-country world index, it fell to, it dropped 7.4% in March, which was its worst month since 2022, while the S&P 500 here domestically dropped 5.1% in March. So we're all likely poorer than we were 30 days ago, thanks to this thing in Iran. Let's talk a little AI. Oracle is cutting jobs because of AI. So they're cutting thousands of jobs to fund their AI data center expansion, and they're trying to be more competitive with Microsoft and Google, who are doing all this GPU infrastructure of their own. It's quite the AI race is happening as we speak. This is interesting. The New York Stock Exchange owner, which is Intercontinental Exchange, they actually go by ICE, they poured another $600 million into Polymarket, which means that they've now deployed nearly $2 billion into Polymarket, which you've heard of Polymarket, right? The prediction markets. And that just sort of underscores Wall Street's, they seem to be convicted in that this event-based trading is going to be around a while, because I can't believe the amount of money there. Like Kalshi, I don't know how you say it. That's the rival platform to Polymarket. Well, they raised $1 billion recently, so they're looking at a $22 billion evaluation. So Polymarket's targeting a $20 billion evaluation. So they're basically the same, Kalshi and Polymarket, in terms of their valuation, 20 and 22. But it's just so wild to me how mainstreamed gambling is in America and how quickly this happened. All right, let me wrap with this. I don't have a kid say the darndest things, but something I read recently is worth talking about. It was the disconnect between parents and non-parents. Talking about the difference between them. And it said there's a big disconnect about what it's actually like to have a child, because the hardships are describable, but the joy is not. And that made a lot of sense to me. Since I talked about the Ibogaine thing, I've had three people with opioid addiction reach out to me since Justin Jackson and I started talking about it. If you need help, get in touch with me. I'm man overseas on the socials. I'm easy to find. Brad D'Antonio is my name. I will give you my cell phone number and we will talk about it. Don't suffer in silence. I would do another episode with Justin to recap this latest Rogan episode, but I have trouble holding my head up that long, so it would be hard for me. Last time we went 2 hours and my neck was killing me. So I'm still having problems and it is an everyday battle. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, let a friend know. Share it with him. Oh, a quick update on G. So he had his surgery April 1st. It was a success. The cancer has been removed, and G is strong like bull. So praise the Lord. I'll talk back at you next week. Take care, and God bless y'all. Bye-bye.